Top of the afternoon to you. Hi, this is Greg Roberts. This is Touring Into Your Show. News, information, and more for this St. Patty's Day. Just some housekeeping rules. If you are driving and want to see this show, you can catch it on WVS 103.7 The Beat Facebook site or M106 Rockin' Soul. These shows do repeat themselves on the Emoji app or the YouTube is on, so you can catch it. Listen, let me get the co-host on, Pastor Melvin C. Burns II. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, my brother. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. You know what? And here's the thing. My thing is that, you know, there are issues that are happening out there in the world.
Yeah.
And you can duck your head in the sand. Go ahead and duck your head in the sand and pretend that ain't happening.
Oh, no. Come on. Okay, that doesn't work.
It's not going to work here because The thing is that we're not going to put our heads in the sand. And speaking of with that, we're going to start our next series. In our next series, we're dealing with issues that are important to our community. And we're going to stick with it. And you know what? The politics we will cover and the other issues we will cover, the local issues we'll cover. We had Mayor Ken Johnson last week. Thank you very much. But we are tired and sick and tired, and James Brown said one more again, very tired of the same old issues happening and nothing being done about it. Now, what we need you to do is, if you're watching it on Facebook now, share it, or if you're listening to it, call somebody and share it. We have a very special guest on today. Our job is to try to find the best people who we can to interview and on these issues. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's what we try to do, Pastor Burns?
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. Sometimes what happens is we can get guests, sometimes we can't, but we do our best to reach out.
Yes.
This guest today is truly a man, boots on the ground, gives his heart to everything to try to do things to make our community better. And he's under the roof of this radio station, and he helps out with West Michigan Community Health Networks. I can't say enough about Two Tons of Fun. my co-partner, Robert Roundtree, Big Rob. Happy St. Patrick's Day, my brother.
Happy St. Patty's Day.
I'm 2%. I'm 2%.
I'm about the same.
So I got a little green on today.
I'm a 6%. Are you more than 2?
You 6%? All
well,
right.
I can make it sound good, Mel.
We're rounding down.
You're right, right.
Right. So today we're going to start our racism conversations with people. There's a different conversation that we have to have. You know how I am with kids and teenagers. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of conversation that we have to have with our kids to get them to survive. To get them to get home, to get them to, in case they get pulled over the police, they have to act a certain way. If somebody talks crazy, there's a different conversation that has to happen in our household. And Rob, I got to commend you, first of all, because you have had your feet to the ground talking to kids, and you still do it. Teenagers, you mentor. Tell people about some of the stuff that you do.
I mentor kids for the AMARI program through the West Michigan Community Health Network. I've mentored, along with Paul, yourself, and every male that's here at the station in any way, shape, or form, 30, 40 kids over the years, if not more. Yeah, do that. Plus, I DJ on the radio and, you know, do a sweep the floors, vacuum, you know, yeah. wash walls, clean
yeah, but,
toilets.
But you've also taken been part of taking kids to Africa.
Yes.
Tell people about that experience before we get into the conversation today.
That is one of the most beautiful experiences you can have, is to open up a child's eyes, not only on their face, but in their mind,
mm-hmm.
To things, different cultures, different foods, different ways to respect your elders and, you know, your parents and things of that nature. So over the years, I've watched at least 30 kids go to Africa and with one ideal and come back with another when they find out animals are not running around in the street and things of that nature. It's a very different. So yeah. I enjoy it and I enjoy loving seeing the kids, you know, never been on a plane ride. I think out of 30, 40 kids we've taken, it was only 4 or 5 of them that had ever been on a plane going anywhere. So a lot of those kids, that was their first plane ride. So
can you tell
go ahead, Pastor Burns.
I'm sorry. Rob, can you tell a difference in the kids once they get back?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I watched some of the kids, because like in Ghana, the younger kids don't eat until the older people have taken a morsel of food and or they'll talk to them with their left arm or right arm behind their back, left arm usually, so they can shake hands with the right. You see some of them mimicking that and bringing it back here and being more respectful. One kid even told me, said, you know, this taught me to be more respectful to my grandmother than I was. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Very beautiful.
Rob, I've seen you get out of coffins to make your to get your point across. There have been some things when you go into schools that you do. Talk about some of the things that you've done to try to get your point across.
I tell kids about my life, you know, a portion of my life, what I can at the time and how much I can. Part of that is, you know, I bought my own coffin when I was like 13, 14 years old before I went away for a little while, went on vacation.
I went to college.
went on vacation for a little while. So, and I try to nail the point across to the kids that life out there on them streets can end in one or two ways, jail, prison, or a coffin. And I wasn't planning on seeing 15 years old. By that time, I had been shot, you know, 6 times, stabbed about 11 times and stuff. And I wasn't planning on seeing life go past 15 years old, if that, because of the life I was living. So the point of that is to get them the reality check that, you know, this is where you can end up. This is one of your final stops if you don't change the way you do things and the way you think. I love children. I hate bullies. So I try to get the kids to understand, stay away from that, you know. And I even offer them to get in the casket, you know, and let me close it and wish them around a little bit. And they don't want to do that.
Nobody want to do that.
They good. seeing me get out the casket and getting pushed around in the
that's
casket.
One thing, but get putting them in there, that's another thing.
That's another thing.
Got to go to the board, Beverly Wells, say amen, 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 and amen, B-Rob. B-Rob, how important, before we get into it, is it you are transparent with your life of telling people what you've been through? I am a firm believer that we have to do that with our kids. Like, we all perfect and all that. No, that don't happen. How important is that we tell them the road that we've been down?
It is very important. For fathers of children, especially little boys, you should have those conversations that you're not perfect and that you've made mistakes, whether it be in relationships, decisions you made with money, jobs, things of that nature. It is very important that you be transparent, along with the mothers. The mothers of the children should be very transparent with their daughters, and let them know, hey, I've made some mistakes. I made some bad decisions with guys and I did some stupid stuff, you know, so you're not alone. I'm here for you to try to help guide you to get, you know, in a better place and not do the same things that I did. That was my reasoning for talking to my four boys like I did and raising them like I did. I gave all five of my children, even my little girl, the opportunity at 18 years old. You can ask me any question you want to ask me, and I will be brutally honest with you. And all of them, that was one of their rites of passage, that they could ask their dad whatever they wanted, and I would be brutally honest, but you got to be able to handle the truth. Now, if you're not able to handle the truth, don't ask the question.
Right.
So at 18 years old, all five of my children had a question they wanted to ask me, and I answered it for them. It was done privately. So the other children underneath them wouldn't hear their question or the answer. Because kids do look at parents in a different light. The one thing I've always noticed is with mothers, children look at their mother as God. Mama feeds me. Mama kisses the boo-boos. Mama make my pain go away in some way, shape, or form. You know, dads are very important, in my opinion. My sons tell me that all the time, that they glad that I wasn't one of those fathers who just walked away, and I was there through every step of the way, even the good, the bad, the indifferent, even my good, bad, and indifferent, they were there with me. So that's why I say, you know, speaking with your kids and being transparent with them is very important.
Next question is going to go to Pastor Burns, but I want to commend you on that. We do the same thing in our household, but what we call it is that anybody in our household can call a family, what we call a family meeting, and any subject can be talked about. It'd be like, Dad, look, you're gaining too much weight. Stop eating.
I've had those conversations.
Right. We have those conversations in our household, and you have to get ready for them. And there's been some very interesting things brought up. Question, Pastor Burns.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because, you know, my daughter's 23, and our you know, she was with me since she was 8, but our relationship has evolved, and she's really one of my best friends. I'm still her dad, but she's really one of my best friends and my favorite people to talk to. But Rob, you know, and you're a man's man. But
yes,
talk about how you balance that, you know, that men grew up with that big tough man that I bring home the money, put on the table, and that's all, versus being also the father that can wipe your kids' tears, you know, and hear how they feel as opposed to what they need to do. Talk about how you balance that.
It's for me, it was hard. I didn't have an example. You know, somebody like you, Pastor Burns, somebody like Greg, you know, my life was a little different. So it was a little harder for me to learn how to do it because I had to grow up fast and I had to have the thickest, toughest skin in the world growing up that way. So it took a little time for me to balance that and to get that. But I ended up getting it. You know, and being that type of father, a lot of times the emotional stuff that my kid's mother took care of that, and she did a great job with that, you know, and I would just come in, you know,
discipline.
The hammer. And I think that's what their mother wanted, you know. You take care of that, except for my daughter. Now, my daughter. Different story. I just tell you, I listened to you talking about your daughter. I was speaking one day. My daughter was real young. And this lady came up to me and she was like, "This your only girl?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "You should take her out on daddy-daughter dates." I said, "That seemed a little weird, you know, whatever and stuff." But she said, no, it shouldn't be weird because you're teaching her how she should be treated by any man or any person in this world that she chooses to date.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
So from then on, that day on, I would take her on daddy-daughter dates.
Yes.
You know, whatever she wanted to do, I wouldn't be on my phone unless she was, she always wanted to get her nails done and I had to pay for it. And, you know, I opened a door for her and I had conversation with her and it was just me and her. And I didn't answer the phones. I didn't do none of that. It was just all about her. So a lot of people now, some people think she's so spoiled, but no, she, to me, she's to the point to where you're going to treat me like better than my daddy did. And I remember her telling somebody, I was trying to date her or whatever, if you can't do what my daddy can do in 24 hours for me, then I don't need to be with you.
I ain't mad at her.
And I didn't mean for it to be that bad, but it's that bad, you know. Like, you know, she's in a young adult, she's what, 22, 23 years old now and stuff. And you know, I still would do these daddy-daughter dates if she has time. She's in college, she's working, trying to pay her rent, you know. But if she fall a little short, daddy'll make it happen. But
I think our
daughters need that.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I thought that was very important that we at that time that it was just me and her and that we spent time. So I commend you on that. Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the issue. The issue Ed, is that we're talking about racism. We're going to start with our teenagers and our youth and our young because they are facing it or they're getting it and learning it. Rob, I want you to talk about it, and I don't want you to hold back any guns or barrels. I want you to take all the bricks and the wood, and if you got a couple guns, and let it both barrels go when it comes down to what our kids are facing out there.
I know me and you and G-Man have had several conversations about racism. Because I am a mixed child. My first experience with racism was from my grandfather on my mother's side. My mother is white for people who don't know. He told my mother to get them nigga kids out of his house. That's my first experience at 3-4 years old. And for some reason, I'm 55 years old now and I still remember that. You know, and it hurts still to this day just as much as it did. Well, I think it's worse now than it was when I was younger because I didn't understand racism. I didn't understand how bad the nigga word was, you know, back then. As I grew older, it hurt even more because the hatred was built up in them. So I've always tried to teach my children, my boys especially, you have to be careful. Even though I had a white sister, my sister's father was white, my mother was white. And she loved me, and I don't think she saw too much of a color. She just saw her little brother. She used to do my hair with a lot of Vaseline. it used to be caked in my head, trust me. And we used to, you know, when she was alive, we used to laugh and joke about it and stuff like that. And she would try to braid my hair and stuff like that, you know. So from my sister's point of view, I was just her brother. But from my grandfather's point of view, I was a nigga. And it's hard, you know, it's hard growing up with that and talking to my children about it because I had to have that balance because, and I had to realize that early on. My oldest son is 33 years old. And to have that balance in talking to him when he was younger, knowing the things that I went through with my mother, with my grandfather, with my white side of the family, and even my black side of the family, or my father's side of the family. They didn't want me or my brother or my other sister. I mean, my little sister and my little brother, because we were mixed. And it was because we were too light to be with them. And we were too dark to be with our white side of the family. So talking to my children was rough for me because I couldn't take my own biases and put it into them. This is your aunt. You know, you love her just as much as you love me. She's an extension of me. But when you look on the news and you turn the news on, I have to remember, I have to have those conversations with them because you are black boys. You are a black girl.
Say it you again. Know,
you're a black boy and you're a black girl. And when we deal with racism, you know, and racism falls on both sides of the spectrum.
Yes,
I mean, to be totally honest, black people are racist. White people are racist.
Hell, we racist against each other.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
You know, there was joke on the show Blackish, and they kept saying, well, black people can't be racist, they can be racial. So, because again, we have this idea that it's okay for us to say something because of what other people have done to us.
Yeah.
But right. Talk about that in effect, and because you felt it. You know, when,
yeah, I felt it.
We want to absorb ourselves, but
right.
Go talk about that a little bit more, because we act like that's not real, but we know it is.
It's very real. You know, I hear black people talking about white people like a dog.
Yeah.
Now you have some great white people, just like you have some great black people. You have some evil black people, just like you have some evil white people.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, with me, because I think it was my daughter who said, Daddy, how could you not like white people as much as you do when your mother was white? And I had to really think about it. You know, I had to really, really, really think about that.
Okay.
I didn't like it, but I had to think about it.
Okay.
And then I started to reflect on black people and reflect on that she at least gave me birth, no matter how she raised me or tried to raise me versus anybody else. You know, black people, we walk around here, you know, like our stuff don't stink.
And it's ghetto fabulous.
Right. And it's only white people being racist to us. And it's not. It's each other being racist to each other. You know, us calling each other the N-word all the time.
All day and every day.
That's a racist statement. If we can take it from each other, why can't we take it from white people?
Yeah.
We're using the word like it's and, cat, rat, dog, you know, some other word. Why are we taking it from each other and not correcting the brother for saying, or the sister from saying it to us?
Yeah.
We have to be equal in it.
And it's, if Rob, you said something that's important, because I remember the first time somebody called me a nigga, it was like, here's a dude that's developmental disabled. And I was young, and I still scratch my head about that episode. Dude, where you get that from?
Right.
But how that impacted me, even to the day where I scratched my head on that one.
And even if you look at today, just recently we had 6 black police officers kill a black man. Okay. Now I taught my boys, anytime the police approach your car, put your hands on the steering wheel, put them up on the dashboard, whatever. But why do I have to have that conversation with my sons, especially my sons? Because my sons ain't no little boys. They some big boys with muscles, you know? So, and they tell us in the news and everything else, well, the police don't know who they're approaching when they approach the car. Well, I don't know who's approaching me when they approach the car.
Right.
They walk up to me with their hand on their gun. Okay. If they walk up to the car and I got a hand on a gun, why am I supposed to trust them and they don't trust me? And they don't even know me when they stop me, pull over, unless they've had other dealings with me.
Yeah.
You know, so my kids was confused on that, and always confused on that.
Yeah.
And they still to this day in their 30s and 20s, late mid 20s. They're still confused on that, you know? So we have to look at it as, you know, me personally, we have to look at it as there has to be a balance of both black and white, whether they're police or just a human being sitting in the office. You know, just think of loans and things like that. You go in a loan officer, you see a black guy in there, and he doesn't understand your plight because he didn't grow up like you did.
Right.
So he denies you the loan or whatever and stuff because of, I got a hoodie on and some jeans on and not a suit and tie when I come in here and ask for a loan.
Yeah.
But I'm the same type of human being as anyone else. So.
Yeah.
Rob, let me ask you a question. Greg and I were talking about this, you know, this unwritten rules that we teach our kids. You know, we know we always talk about the conversation with beliefs, but yes. You know, sons, even your daughters, what are some of those unwritten rules because they're black children? Do we have to teach? You know, I remember coming back and forth from school when I was younger, you know, don't wear a t-shirt, wear a shirt with a collar on it, you know, don't look, you know, like you're escaping from somewhere. But and it's a different thing. But and I know kids have a hard time because their world is so different than ours.
Yes.
But, you know, talk about some of those rules you had to give.
You know, make sure you have a decent haircut. Mm-hmm. If it's one of my boys, clean shave.
Okay.
Make sure you have a shirt on with a tie and some slacks and some dress shoes. Keep your pants up over your butt. You know, my daughter, make sure you don't have too ghetto of a hairstyle if you want the job, if you want the loan.
That's a whole nother show. We have you back on that one.
Right. You know, yeah. So. Make sure you smell decent. You're not too overly cloned or perfumed up.
Yes, sir. No, sir.
What about when they go in the store? When they go in the store, when you go into the shopping store,
keep your hands in your pocket.
Right.
I mean,
keep your hands in your pockets. When they get a little older, keep your hands on your. Don't grab something. Throw it in the buggy and then put your hand in your pocket. Don't do that.
No.
Because the first thing security going to think is you, if they didn't see it drop in the buggy, they're going to assume you stuffed it in your hoodie or your pants pocket.
I mean, if we laugh about it, but
yeah,
tell people why you're telling your kids these rules for what reason?
To live.
That's exactly. So they can live.
Yeah.
They don't die that day.
Yeah.
You know, especially when dealing with the police, you know,
they
want us to trust them so much, but they keep killing us. And it's not just us. I know that they're killing white men and white women too, and Asian men, Asian women, but they're killing us disproportionately than they are killing whites. And I don't want to get, well, you know, God forbid I get a call and somebody say this police been killed. One of my children, I let it be known long time ago. He said, you touch mine, I'm touching 10 of yours.
There is no white protocol when something happens to your child. I don't want to be in a position, but I don't know what the right protocol is.
You may as well get a baseball bat to hit him in the side of his head because he's going to catch a case. Give him a concussion.
I'm not gonna be that parent that sit on the news and say don't do this and that because I'm finna file a lawsuit. No, I'm finna lead tearing this mug up.
This
you know, because it's my child. Yeah. You know, and having a child is already hard enough, but when you black and you having a child, you already got so many things stacked against you. You got everything stacked against you. When you get a bachelor's degree, you better have a master's because that'll be equivalent to a bachelor's degree. If you want to be looked at as that you have a master's degree, you better get a doctorate or two doctorates. You know, my sons, two of my older sons have master's degrees. Mm-hmm. Okay. One of them has two master's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that he can be on the level playing field as our white counterparts. And racism goes and cuts so deep. You know, think about this, brothers. How many times you walked into an elevator and there was a white woman in there? and she clenched her purse. Maybe even so subtly, but you notice it.
Maybe wait a minute. Or you walking past a car and you hit a door lock.
Yeah.
You
know, just think about that. Why do we have to tell our kids, well, don't take too offense to that, that they do it to everybody. They do it to your dad, you know, and your sons or your daughter. Well, your sons, especially because my sons are huge.
Yeah.
They're, you know, looked upon as a threat. But why am I my sons, a huge black man, looked upon as a threat, and a huge white man ain't. If you look at all the white-collar crimes, if you look at all the crimes dealing with money, we just had two white guys arrested in Muskegon County for scamming elderly people out of $8,000-$9,000 and stuff that was from West Palm Beach, Florida. Okay, why would an elderly person give a person that much money over a phone call? Think about that.
Let's go to the board. Beverly Wells says, amen, yes, Lord. You're preaching good there, Rob. Let's get back to the conversation.
Yeah, just think about that. You know, if I, black man, big as I am, or whatever and stuff, call a white lady or whatever, and I show up at her door for $8,000 because I'm lying, saying that I'm the grandson that's locked up in jail and blah, 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 blah. Then I have Melvin Burns call and say, well, he's the judge, and the judge saying you need 25 more thousand. And then G-Man is the lawyer saying, how many white people would fall for that? First thing they're going to see is our black skin.
And
the first thing they're going to hear is our black slang.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing is that if we ask for $8, the police is being called. $8.
Quick, fast, and in a hurry.
And here's the thing, Rob, and this is to you, Pastor Burns, is that people don't understand that there are people out there that don't know you A from Adam, don't know your history, don't know nothing about you, but hate you automatically. And people, let me tell you, there are still places in Muskegon that don't like you to step in their business or their club. Hello.
Yeah. And you
they
know,
don't.
Yeah. And you know, and again, we talk about raising our kids. The hurtful part, the hard part is when the kids, you know, when they start, you know, get to be teens and they have no black friends and white friends, and their world is different. So the nuances that we know, and you try to explain certain things. I know, you know, my daughter won't want me telling this. She'd go to some friends' houses, and also they want to ask her all these questions, you know, and she wanted to stay friends, you know, and I'd pick her up and she's quiet. And then she told me, well, they want to ask me all these questions about the heights and about what it's like being black. You know, because my response is, have them call me.
That's good.
But you know, the fact that we have to try to explain this to our kids who live in a different world.
Yes.
You know, but that darkness, you know, that evil is still there. You know, it's hard. It hurts to have to have those conversations. You know, it was difficult for me. I wanted her to see her own eyes. And me not skew it, but at the same time, I have to give her this knowledge and information.
I remember having to talk to my daughter about everybody wanting to touch her hair and what all this kind of stuff, and having that conversation.
Oh, yeah. Right.
People don't understand that we have to have these kind of conversations with our kids, and it's automatic. It's automatic. Every kid that is under, go ahead, Big Rob.
It's second nature. I was just saying, it's second nature to have those conversations, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
You have a mixed child, man. And she grew up in a different time than I grew up in. You know, by me being mixed in this, and I'm born in the 60s and 70s and stuff, I remember my mom getting spit at, called a nigga lover.
Mm.
All this, I remember that. And seeing things on television, the hatred that was spewed out. Now I hear white kids using the N-word like we use it. I hear Mexican kids using the N-word like we use it. You know, we made it so popular or whatever. And I heard somebody analyze it like this. They said, well, we made it comfortable for us to say it to each other so it wouldn't hurt us anymore.
Woo! Say that again, Rob.
Yeah.
We made it so comfortable that so that it wouldn't hurt us so much no more. But to me, it hurts still because I understand the history behind it. Mm-hmm. And I taught my children the history behind it. It wasn't done in a positive way. It was done in all of it has negative connotations behind it, whether I'm saying it to Melvin Burns or whether I'm saying it to Gregory T. Roberts or whether I'm saying it to a white person. It still has the negative connotations to it, and it's still not comfortable with me.
Yeah.
But as our children grow, and they have children, it's going to be more comfortable to hear it coming from a white person, and maybe it won't sting no more. But if you raise your children right and you understand the history behind it, it will always sting. You know, they made a big fuss about the Confederate flag. Okay. And why are people so upset about it? Why do you think people are so upset about it?
And more and more, but it's important that you bring this up because, you know, there's been talk about the Confederate flag, statues. I mean, I see a flag the other day that I was just, I wanted to throw a cross on the guy's car, just something. So I wouldn't catch a case. But anyway, is that we see this stuff every day. And then not only that, like in the music, I went into a club and Boom Phil Hills, I mean, in Muskegon, and way in the country. And every other song was a black song with the nigger word in it. And they just, everybody just jamming. And I was the only black guy. And then I went in there because I used to work for the DJ company. He said, that's all they listen to. Yeah. And but we have to have a conversation with our kids to say, listen, that word is disrespectful, but then they go in the club and that's all they hear, right?
My niece, my sister's daughter, I asked her one day, does she have to have those conversations with her son? She has a son and a daughter. Mm-hmm. And she said, she looked at me like real puzzled. She was like, no, I don't have to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And my nephews, whose mother was my sister, mm-hmm. do you have to have those conversations with your children? No. And they got boys. Okay. But I had to. Yeah. I have no other choice. If I wanna go before my children and God didn't call them home. Mm-hmm. Then I got to have those conversations with my kids.
Yeah.
You know, to make sure they come home, whether it's from the police or whether it's from the neighbor, you know, or the local block club president or whatever. Because mm-hmm. they're killing our children at an alarming rate for some of the stupidest things. The boy had a Arizona and Skittles. I mean, he was walking home. Why can't I walk down the street
minding your own business,
minding my own business at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning just because I'm tired and I don't find myself in Mona Shores or Roosevelt Park or let's say I'm in Spring Lake or Grand Haven? Why can't I walk down the street without the police pulling me over, talking about let me see your ID and all that other kind of mess? I saw one time where a police officer said something to a white woman in where I live at. They mm-hmm. call it the hood a little bit. And he said to the white lady, I'm not even in this neighborhood when I'm not in uniform. Why are you here?
Wow.
But this is a Muskegon police officer.
Yeah.
So why would you say that to somebody if we're supposed to be free, truly free? We should be able to walk into any neighborhood as long as we're on the sidewalk and we're walking or looking or whatever and stuff. I'm on a public access. Well, it's strange that you're walking down this street at 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, it shouldn't be because I'm free.
Yeah.
Rob, it happened to a family member of mine coming home from work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with a bicycle. And he got pulled. I mean, they pulled him over on a bicycle and he was arrested because he was in a particular neighborhood. And why are you doing in this neighborhood? People don't understand this stuff is going on today.
It's going on today and it will continue to go on as long as we keep tolerating it and we don't put people in place that can change it. We need laws for this kind of stuff. I know they're changing some things, but that stuff needs to be changed immediately. The stuff with the police, the stuff with people killing blacks. The three guys killed the guy for jogging in the street. Mm-hmm. You know, he stopped at a construction site. I had to think about it. Sometimes I've stopped at a construction site just to see
what you're building,
what they're doing. You know, right. I don't know how to do this. So, oh, you gotta put up a thing with a string, and you gotta. Oh, you know, sometimes you want to get out and ask questions, but you're afraid to because they got to get the job done. Yeah. But, you know, it's things like that that you don't see all the time, but people aren't taking it serious enough. You know, I'm not saying protesting and tearing stuff up is the right way to do it, but we need to put people in place that will get the jobs done.
Yeah.
Period. And we need to put enough people in there, both black, white, green, purple, gay, straight, whatever. We need to put them in place so that they can change a lot of this stuff. Yeah. Because America will keep doing what they're doing and the people will keep doing what they're doing until things change. I look at me being what I call a half-breed mixed with black and white. The stuff that my mother and I had to go through is different from what G-Man's daughter had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Versus my nieces and nephews who are even much more younger, 5, 6, 7 years old. Mixed kids are becoming more commonplace to see. They're still unaccepted in some families, both white and black.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's becoming more acceptable to see a mixed kid, to talk to a mixed kid and not treat them or tease them. I remember being teased because I had straighter hair. Oh, you think the guys, I had to fight them all the time. Oh, you think you this, that, because you got good hair. What you mean good hair? You got just as good hair as I do. What are you talking about? You ain't got to worry about popping naps. You think this stuff don't get nappy? You out your mind. You know, just because it's a little straighter don't mean it don't still have that black mix in it, because it does. But people don't understand that until they talk to us. You know, some mixed kids and stuff like that, you know. And I think in life, we need to just teach our children to be better human beings.
Mm, that's good.
White people. Let's stop calling each other nigger. And let's start calling each other brothers, gods, kings, queens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
That's more of a positive affirmation than calling me some nigga. Because I'm not your nigga. You ain't finna tie me up no tree and beat me and without a fight. And you might die trying to do it. So, our kids are our future. And it's sad we have to have those conversations, but we do. And I hated having those conversations with my son. My 19-year-old son just started driving when he was 18.
Yeah,
I had to have that conversation with him. If you're pulled over by the police, put your hands on the steering wheel. If you want them to put you in handcuffs, They can grab the stuff, then grab it. Record it if you can, the interaction.
Yeah.
You know, so that there's some proof if you did something or if you didn't do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like, well, why, Daddy? Look at the news.
Right.
Well, not only that, Big Rob, do we have to have conversations? I took my kids or kids that I coach, I would take them down the street, put them in a car and demonstrate and show me how what you're supposed to do when you get pulled over. That's the kind of stuff that we have to do. Question, Melvin Burns.
No, and I agree. No, my thing was always, you do what they say, let me fight.
You're just right. Do what they
say, you can call me and I'll take it from there.
Right.
Yeah. Rob, let me ask you this question. You know, again, we talk about this, you know, now your kids are older. I'm sure they get confronted with issues in their own way. Have you seen moments where you say, okay, I can see what I've taught them, how they've handled certain situations when it came to
racism? Yes. Yes. I have seen that. Okay. There was an incident with one of my kids and I would have blew up.
Uh-huh.
You know, and lost it.
Uh-huh.
But he remained calm and backed away from the situation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He called me and his mom, told me and his mom what was going on. And I blew up more than he did. Uh-huh. You know, the beauty, I tell people this all the time, the beauty of being mixed, like me.
Uh-huh.
My mother was white. So you can call me racist all day. At the end of the day, I came out of a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I can call you a nigga and it'd be acceptable. So just as well as that nigga is acceptable, cracker, and any other white epithet I can come up with, is acceptable because I am mixed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My daughter came up with an incident where this lady at work, which was white, my daughter's a little darker than me. And she, oh, you're just racist or whatever and stuff. And I told my kids, keep a picture of your grandmother. She showed the lady at work the picture of her grandmother, shut her down.
Mm.
Now she telling my little beautiful black daughter that she's a racist and she don't know how to treat white people.
Mm.
And she had to show her who her grandmother was, who her aunt was, who her first cousins were.
Mm.
And then it like blew back. Then she showed her a picture of her dad.
Wow.
Now, think about that. Mm-hmm. Why should she have to go through that? Because that same little black, beautiful girl, if it was a white girl, she wouldn't have had to do that to show mm-hmm. her thing. I'm racist on both ends, if people want to call it that, because I will use these epithets on you. And ain't nothing you, white woman can't say, and white man can't say nothing to me about, oh, he's racist. No, I'm not. I'll show you my DNA. My DNA say I'm 54% white. So if anything, I'm more racist towards the blacks than I am the white, man.
Big Rob, you making the case you're a white man.
Hey, let some of my friends tell it. I'm a white guy.
54%, you
54% white.
We might start hanging out with you. Might get some places we couldn't get in before.
Yeah, hey, yeah.
I'm like, where's the good credit at? Because I sure got it. I need some good credit over here.
Hey, Rob, I want you to talk about me being in a mixed marriage. I can't tell you the times and the conversations that we've had to talk to people and some of the most stupid comments that come out of their mouths. For instance, you're going out, you just sitting, and with Pond, I'll give you an example. We're at Ponderosa, right? And you just can feel something on your back, and you see somebody staring at you. And so what I would do is I would keep walking past the watermelon, and then, is he going to take a piece? Is he going to take a piece? And then all of a sudden, then I look right at him in the face. And then they'll look down and stuff like that. But talk about it, because we live this every day.
Right.
And if we ain't talking to people, especially with the political dog whistles that people are trying to put out with hate, that how we have to educate, because this racism, instead of getting better, and that we're getting more educated, now is took a bad side.
It's in those mixed relationships. I feel for people that's in those mixed relationships, because they got to answer questions about things, not only to people that don't know them, but to their own family members. Sometimes I feel like you all in those mixed relationships have more racism against you than a black person.
We get
that's
it
the both. Way I feel.
We get it from both sides.
Both sides of them. Look at him. Why is he with this white woman? Look at this white woman. Why is she with this black man?
Mm-hmm.
And these questions come up, and it's like, you know, we love each other, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we're in this relationship. That's why we're doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Questions like, why are you coaching those white kids and not coaching our kids? Because you didn't give me a chance.
Right.
I mean, that kind of stuff, and it's still coming up today. Well, right. Why do you go to that church? I mean, it's still coming up. Pastor Melvin Burns, right?
Yeah. I can ask both of you guys this, you know, with your daughter, Gray. How do you work on giving them that sense of identity? You know, your daughter identifies as a young black woman. We know that for sure.
Definitely.
But we know she loves her mother.
Love her.
You know, same ride with your kids. You know, they have this white grandmother, and you talk about, you know, you don't want them to grow up being identified as black and hating white people.
Right.
Yeah. So how do you maneuver that with them when they hear certain things? Because I didn't, you know, have white people in my family, but specifically, you know, not married to. How do you maneuver that with your kids?
This is what I did with my kids. I told my kids, first of all, if you can't go to a movie by yourself or go somewhere by yourself without having to have somebody on your arm or all that kind of stuff, you got to learn to love yourself. Mm-hmm. They have to have that love for themselves to know who they are. And that was so important to me that they identified to have that. Then they could go whatever way that they wanted to. And I'm happy, like Rob, with his kids, that he's done an amazing job, that with my kids, that they have identified that, look, this is the way dad treated, this is how mom treated, and if I'm not treated such and such a way, then it's unacceptable. But this is the stuff that we have to talk about our kids on a daily basis, and we still get phone calls today. How about you, Rob?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on everything you said. With raising my kids and stuff, I was always, be proud of who you are. You know, I'm proud of who I am, mm-hmm. you know, now. At first, I wasn't. I was always had this doubt of who I was, who I should identify as, and things of that nature and stuff like that. But I told my kids, be proud of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You have white in your blood.
Yeah.
You are part of a white person.
Yeah.
Your dad was half white.
Yeah.
So you're a quarter white.
And I think that's what you're saying, Rob, is, you know, you got to that place of, yeah, I'm mixed. And don't, like, I'm right. black and suppressed or white. Like, I'm white. It's a fact, and it makes me who I am.
Right. And yeah. and that's the beauty of, I tell people sometimes, being mixed is a beautiful thing. Because
mm-hmm.
I can hate people equally. I can love people equally.
You meant to say love people equally, right?
He didn't say love. I can hate. I can hate both.
He meant to say love people equally.
I can love them equally, but I can also hate them equally. So, you know, whoever out there listening, it is understand. I can love you equally. I can also hate you equally.
Rob, how important is it when if you're on Facebook or you sit out and you get that off-color joke and you step up and say, that ain't right?
What do you mean? How?
Well, somebody...
They don't want to get in those conversations with me. I understood what you were saying, but...
Yeah, but tell people how important it is, because a lot of people let it fly by.
No, don't let it fly by. You check that fool. Because if you don't, then who?
Well, Rob thought it was funny. You know, if you don't say that, you don't say nothing.
right. So, me personally, I get in those arguments with people, white and black. You know, you got some black extremists out there, just like you got some white extremists out there. Mm-hmm. And I check them both. I don't care. You know, if I agree with what they're saying, I will tell them, you should have said this a little differently. You have a valid point. But people ain't going to listen to you if you don't say it in a different way. I can rah, rah, rah all day long and stuff, but people only going to hear so much of that rah, rah, rah. But if I talk to you like you're a human being and like, you know, just simple thing as a human being, you're going to hear more of that than me rah, 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 rah.
Yeah.
We're about to, the show's about to end. Oh, Rob.
That was quick.
I know, man. But doing this talk about racism, we're going to have you on more because we're going to have more people. Talk to that kid right now that's facing racism and what should they do and how should they feel. Give us some advice.
If you're a kid out there facing racism, listen to me good. Remember who you are and don't let that dictate who you become. Love you for you. Walk away from it. Go tell somebody who can deal with it. Like an adult, not your crazy uncle who just got out the joint. You know, he just did 25 years.
Say it with your chest.
They're right. Go tell somebody that's got a level head and that can help show you and guide you on how to handle that. Best thing for you to do if you're a kid out there facing racism, walk away and get some advice. It's going to come back to you again.
Don't hold it in.
Yeah.
Don't hold it in. Please don't hold it in.
Pastor Burns, any advice?
You know what? I was thinking something else, but I want to say this before we run out of time because, you know, people will confuse our love for being black with disliking other people. And I want to say, Rob, before we run out of time, you know, I reached out to you when I heard the first time I heard you talking about being a father on the radio. And I reached out to you, you know, I was raised by men. And I heard this man talking about raising his kids. And I was like, I've known him for a while, but I didn't know him like that. And so I'm saying, if you're a father out there and you struggle with raising your kids, you know, I shouldn't say I did it by myself. I had a village. But if you're a father out there and you're struggling with raising your kids, you struggle with how to have conversations, this is a man you should talk to.
Yeah.
He's been there. He's done it. He's transparent about his transformation and the things he's had to deal with. You know, I don't sanction everybody, but I'm saying I know it could be tough. I know guys deal with baby mamas and ex-wives and all of that. And talking to some men who've been through it and can tell you, you know, when it get crazy and how to keep your feet on the ground. This is a brother you can talk to. And I don't want the time to get away without saying
thank you.
And
thank you,
send it to our audience so they know that.
Rob, mentor programs, how can people get in touch with you?
Amari Entertainment is our mentorship program. Please call 231-727-5007. If you have a young man out there who needs some help, some guidance, please give us a call. Again, that number is 231-727-5007. Set up an appointment and we can sit down and have a chat.
That's it. Listen, people, we're going to start the chat on racism. Thank you so much. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Listen, go out, sow a seed in somebody's life. You never know who you're going to help. Take care, guys. God bless you. And remember, you were created by God. You're royalty. You're not what they say about you.